All right, let's go to Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it from him. Starting today, and probably two more lessons at least, we're going to be talking about children and the raising of children and the nature of children. And you really can't study Proverbs without delving into and dealing with raising of children. And in fact, Solomon wrote that to instruct his son. And we're just going to talk about it a little bit. A lot of times in our society, the raising of children is kind of like the theory of some people on how to teach a child to swim. You just take them and throw them in the water, and they'll learn to swim. But they also may find out that they sink to the bottom. And so there's been a lot of disasters in trying to raise children that way. But as you look at society, particularly those who do not have any Christian influence, people tend to raise their children exactly how they were raised. And those problems just continue to perpetuate themselves. And the results are often disastrous. And so what I want to do today, I want us just to think about the nature of a child and then how to deal with that. There's really three things that we find in the nature of a child, and we'll try to flesh those out the best we can. A child is sinful. And a child is simple, and a child is childish. Not everything that a child does needs to be a capital punishment, because sometimes they're just simple, but they don't need to remain simple. And so the Bible, particularly this book of Proverbs, addresses this nature of a child. First of all, as we said here, a child is sinful. And, of course, yeah, we all know that. But I really think that we lose sight of that. A baby is born. You hold it as a father in your hands, and you know that your wife thinks that's the most beautiful thing that's ever come into the world. And you look at it, and it's red and wrinkly. It looks like a little raisin. And hopefully one day it will be attractive. At least that was me. There is a uniqueness about babies, but they don't really get cute until they're about 3 months old. At least for me. So whenever you hand me your new baby and I say, boy, that's a baby, then I'm digging my hole, aren't I? But every person enters into this world with a disposition to sin. We don't come into this world morally neutral. I think sometimes we think that. And where I was going with that thing about when the baby comes in, you know, it's so wonderful, and there is a great, the children are heritage of the Lord, and fruit of the womb is his reward, and it's a tremendous gift to have children. But we also need to not lose sight of the fact that there's a nature about them that's evil. There's a nature about them that's warped. There's a nature about them that's distorted. And we need to help them. We need to point them to the Lord. Every child has a descendancy from Adam. And very early in the book of Genesis in the Bible, very first book of the Bible, it says that the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. David said in the Psalms, "Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me, not in the act of sin, but when he came forth, he had the nature of sin." David further said in Psalms 58, "The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies." Romans says, "Wherefore was by one man sin into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." And so while Proverbs doesn't go about trying to present and prove or even, give verses about the nature of a child that it's sinful, well, what Proverbs does, it just admits it. I mean, it just begins and gives proverbs and gives instructions about children with the assumption that everybody understands that the nature of a child is one that is the nature of a sinner. If you look over in the 29th Proverb, in chapter 29 and verse 15, it says, in Proverbs 29:15, it says, "The rod of reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." And so what it's implying here is that when a child is just left to do what he wants to do, that, all children will be children, and, he's just acting like a child, and he goes around pushing over other kids, and he's doing his deal. When a child is left to himself, it only results in being proficient in sinning. A child has to be dealt with, not just have his diapers changed and fed every day, and taken care of in those ways, and doctored when he has problems physically. But he has a problem that's morally needs to be dealt with. And if you leave that alone, he's going to become an expert in manipulating you. He's going to become an expert in sinning. And so, someplace in this euphoria of having a baby and being so excited and happy and overjoyed, which is natural, and which I'm not saying shouldn't happen at all, because, eight times that happened with me, and seven more times when this one is born, having a grandchild. But every time they were born into the world, there was a moment there in those first hours that I went before the Lord, not only thanked him for the child, but pleaded with him that they'd be born again someday. Their nature is that of a sinner. So Proverbs' appeal is made assuming that the child is bent not towards righteousness, but he's bent towards sinfulness. And it warns him of certain evils. In chapter 5 through 7 of Proverbs, it warns later on about the adulterous woman. And a child is never assumed to be walking in the way of wisdom apart from being instructed about specific things. If you look in Proverbs chapter 4, and verse 24. This is in Proverbs 4, wisdom is personified as a woman. And actually, if you boil it all down, it really pictures Christ. But in Proverbs 4 and 24, "Put away from thee a forward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee." In verse 27, "Turn not to the right nor to the left, remove thy foot from evil." And what you're seeing here, and why I read these verses, is that the direct action needs to be taken. Put away from thee a forward mouth and perverse lips from yourself. turn not to thy right hand or to the left, remove thy foot from evil. It's assuming, what it's assuming is that not only do children, you and I, when we were born, not only do we have a predisposition for sinfulness, but we have a preference for it. We want our way. And we prefer, you know, if there's two, even, you know, at 67 years old, if there's two ideas, your idea and my idea, I prefer my idea instead of your idea. Well, we have a preference for sinning. And you know, if you tell your child to pick up the toys, you know what? He'd prefer not to pick up the toys. Unless somehow you discipline him to say, you know, you got to do this, or you're going to get a whipping, or you got to do this, and you praise him for doing it. But the whole preference is to go against authority, to go against that which is right. And there may be some children that pick up their toys because they know that they're going to hear mama talking about how good they are. Like Susie, she keeps telling me that Evans is an angel. He's just such an angel. He doesn't whine. He doesn't fuss. He goes to church, she said, and there's another little family there that's got a little boy, and she was saying he either doesn't get disciplined at home or he doesn't get enough sleep or he's got gut problems. I don't know what that means. you have to talk to these naturopaths over here, but... gut problems, and he goes around and he's trying to poke Evans in the eye and do stuff, and Evans just kind of takes it. I said, well, someday Grandpa may need to teach Evans to double up his fist and pop him in the nose. But my point is that there's a preference for disobedience. There's a preference for evil. They're not. You know, Evans may be a little angel, but in his heart, he still has a preference to do what he wants to do, and he's just laid back. And so, there's a preference for sin. Look over in Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 20. And what I want you to see as I read Proverbs 1, verse 20 to 23, that there's a preference here for sin. It says, wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the place of concourse and the openings of the gates in the city, uttering her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the scorners delight in scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I'll pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. And so it's a preference for not loving simplicity, and scorning, and hating knowledge. And then look down in verse 24. Because I've called, and you refused, I stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. He made a choice that they're choosing. When he calls, they refuse. When he stretched out his hand, they disregard it. But you have set it not my counsel, and would none of my reproof. Again, here's a choice being made by the people that are addressed, not only children, but adults in this context. In verse 31, therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. And what I'm just trying to stress here is that this tendency to go your own way, do your own thing, is a choice that children choose to go their own way. Do their own deal. And so, the problem is not one of the environment. But the problem is the heart. Proverbs says, who can say, I have made my heart clean, I'm pure from my sin? You see, a child needs correction, but the correction ought to have a goal in mind. Because a child not only needs correction, but ultimately a child needs conversion. Because his heart is the problem. And until God places in him, within him, a new heart, until he becomes a new creature, he's going to be his own God. He's going to be his own master. He's going to, he's going to say, mom tells him to sit down, and he goes sit down, but he says in his heart, or even back to his mom, I'm sitting down, but I'm still standing up on the inside. The problem is the heart. And so discipline, the Lord, you're going to see here in Proverbs that the goal of discipline is to bring about an understanding of depravity, understanding of their depraved soul, their utter sinfulness, to bring them to a place of repentance. In chapter 4 and verse 23, we see again that it's a heart problem. Chapter 4, he says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. In chapter 5 and verse 12, and say, I have hated instruction, my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to him that instructed me. And so there's something within him that's a heart problem. And Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it from him. And so he needs discipline to teach him a lesson that ultimately we're going to have to not only answer to mom and dad and to the government, but ultimately we're going to have to answer to God. And when a child is just let go and do his own thing, his mama says, eat your peas. And he don't think he likes peas today. And she said, hey, listen, if you don't eat your peas for supper, you're going to get them for breakfast. And he laughs. That ain't happening. And if you say, okay, jump down, and then next morning he gets his pancake or bowl of cereal, what's he learned? He's learned a lesson that I don't have to eat my peas. He learned a lesson that what they say, it doesn't matter. And so that translates on into life. He goes to school, disobeys the teacher. Of course, most of you homeschool, and that's wonderful. But disobedience doesn't bring a spanking in school. We outlawed spankings way back there. I'm telling you, though, when I went to school, if you went to the principal's office, it was an automatic spanking. You didn't want to go to the principal's office. And when the teacher said, you better straighten up or you're going to the principal's office, you sat straight as you could sit, because he was old school and he didn't just tickle your rear end when you went in there. They understood that there's discipline. There's consequences. And so the need for discipline. And it's a heart problem. Now, also, there needs to come an understanding to the child, as we've already related to, that there's someone greater than mom and dad watching. There's someone watching that never misses a thing. And they're not going to get away with it. And it's not Santa Claus. Better watch out. Better not. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. Well, that's one reason why you shouldn't promote Santa Claus. He is not deity. But God is. I don't think you ought to go around using God as a threat so your children straighten up. You better straighten up because God's watching. That's just a cop-out. You need to deal and you need to do what parents are required to do. But there does need to come an understanding that ultimately they're going to have to answer to the deity, that they're going to have to answer to God. And Proverbs addresses those things. Proverbs 15 and verse 3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. Proverbs 15 and verse 11. Hell and destruction are before the Lord. How much more than the hearts of the children of men? And then in verse 27. That's not 15:27. The spirit of the of man is the candle of the Lord, searching the inward parts of the belly. And so they need to understand that God is watching, God sees, and hopefully they're going to be accountable to the Lord. I know that there's a place, there's an age someplace before the age of accountability, and that children are safe, but they need to begin to be taught that we have these rules in our home because we want our home to function properly, and we're watching, and we know what's going on, and they understand, you know, that Mama has eyes in the back of her head, and they done, you know, they gotten the chocolate chips, and they got them all over their face, and they come, and you ask them, have you been in the chocolate chips? And well, they understand that there's some wisdom there, but they also need to understand that they're coming, you know, they need to begin to grow in knowledge that God is watching, that God sees, and that we're accountable to God, and that there's a reckoning, and to let them know that one day God's going to be dealing with their heart, and that not to try to put words in their mouth and make professions of faith before they really understand their sinful condition, but to let them know that day's coming. And to get a concept of a God, to know that, you know, God has created this, that God brings the seasons, get them to understand theology as a little kid's theology, and then begin to introduce to them the accountability to this God. Okay, so he's sinful, and I need to understand that, and that needs to be from birth. And it needs to be not just at a certain age. I think maybe I better start dealing with him along those lines. We don't need any general patents that are three year old in our home. Okay. Okay, look over again back in 122. It says here, how long, ye simple ones, will you love simplicity, and scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? There's this idea of simpleness, being simple. And let me just kind of read this article to you about being simple. A recent newspaper contained a letter to Ann Landers in which a young man was seeking her counsel on an important matter. He wrote, I'm a 17-year-old male with a big problem. I quit high school last year and moved out of the house. I stayed away 4 months and decided to move back. I hold down a job and make good money. I have an offer to move into an apartment with a friend. I'm really tempted because I'm not happy living with my parents. Too much arguing. The problem, the friend is female. She's like a sister. I swear there's nothing between us. Well, that's been pretty simple, isn't it? And there's a part of our children that's not just sinful, but they're simple. And that's due to inexperience. They are naive. And they just don't understand some things. I think sadly that television and movies and entertainment has taken away a lot of innocency and simpleness from children. And if I had to do it over, I probably would have been a little more stricter even than I was. For a long time, we never had television. I remember when our kids were real little, we showed a movie, Old Yeller. It's pretty innocent. And but when the hogs got after the dog, my kids ran behind the couch and hid. And now, you know, movies can be seen in the home where a guy takes out a gun and shoots people and blood spatters every place, and the innocency is gone. I remember in the Vietnam War how our nation was shocked, and I was shocked when it showed the Viet Cong killing a person kneeling in the street on television. There's some things about being simple when in the innocent state that is good. But in other ways, simpleness needs to be dealt with. And so what I'm saying is this, is that they need to be warned, you know? If I had a little 1-year-old and I set him up here on the stage, and I put a toy over here, a little push car or something, and I put on the other side of him a rattlesnake, which is he going to be attracted to? Because he's moving, he's active, he's alive. And so there's a simpleness that comes in not being educated yet, not being instructed yet. And so Proverbs goes about that. Proverbs begins to try to instruct our children about avoiding this simpleness. Look over in chapter 9 and verse 13. Chapter 9, 13. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing, for she sitteth at the door of her house on a seat in high places of the city to call passengers who go right on their way. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. And as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. And so, what's it saying? Well, it is saying that it'd be wise for a father at some point in time, at the beginning of puberty, that he begins to tell his son, listen, there's going to be desires and emotions. There's going to be sexual things that's going to stir you. And you need to understand that if you don't get a hold of that, and we don't understand this from the beginning and begin to deal with this, that it's going to result in some disasters. It's going to result in but who knoweth that the dead are there, and their guests are in the depths of hell. That fornication brings with it death. It brings with it disaster. And that you need to begin to get a hold of those emotions. You know, I can only think about how I grew up, but I learned about sex in the locker room. And you know what? about 99% of it was wrong. And so you daddies, one of these days, you better confront those things. You better give, you know, and where's a good way to confront it? Right here. Right here. You don't have to get into ugly, dirty language. The Bible's got right here. It begins to describe some things. And you begin to talk to the simple one. You know, children are just, and teenagers are just simple-minded about sexual activity. And it's become, in our society, it's become the norm to be sexually active. In fact, if you're not sexually active, you're abnormal. But not according to the Bible. And those issues must be addressed. You know, we somehow parents think that we should never talk about those things. You better talk about those things. Because if you don't, they're going to get their instruction about those in the locker room, or on the street, or off the internet. And it's information that's not, you know, it's information where the marriage bed, you know, the marriage bed is undefiled. But any kind of information before activity in the marriage bed is what? It's defiled. And those are strong, strong emotions, especially in a young man. They need to be dealt with. And he needs to be taught, the simple one needs to be taught not only the consequences, but they need to be taught discipline. In their lives. And if you don't think we're bombarded by it, then you're living as an ostrich with your head in the ground. We're bombarded by it. And all these Hollywood actresses and the Kardashians, you know, and all of their illegitimate children and how they are, you know, they're something to look up to. Until you look into the emptiness of their soul. Are you with me? Emptiness of their soul. And so, the simple one provides a child with descriptions of those things which are wrong and undesirable and can lead to death in part of your life being taken away. Look in Proverbs 1 and verse 10. Proverbs 1:10. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us look privately for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Someone comes along and they say, hey, come on, let's go have a little fun tonight. Well, what Solomon's doing here, he's trying to warn his son about potential snake pits. He's trying to warn his son about swamps that he can fall off into that's going to put him in quicksand. They're simple. We need instructed. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 12. Proverbs 6 and verse 12. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a forward mouth. He winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers. Forwardness in his heart, he deviseth mischief continually, he soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly, suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. So here's a person that he's mouthy, he talks a lot, he winks, you know, he says, let's go do this, and you know, if you come with me, I'll do this, and then he winks. But he's what you really see here in the description of this man in chapter 6, 12 through 14, what you see is a very charismatic person. There's lots of charismatic people out there that, you know, and our children, hey, you know, he's the cool one. This guy's cool, man. And they're going to, being simple-minded, they're going to say, okay, let's get going. Because what you're going to find in this world, some of your children are leaders and some of them are followers. Some of them can stand alone, some of them can't. But listen, you have the ability to form that person that God has given you to raise. And you can go into the Bible, you can begin to talk to them and say, listen, you're going to run into people like this, and they're going to say, come on, let's go do this and do that. And you need to check your heart. You need to understand that the Spirit is like a candle within you. You need to think things of, think it over, and you need to ask yourself, what's going to be the end of this activity? What's going to be the result when I start out thinking it's innocent and it's not? What are you going to do when you get in a car with a bunch of guys and you think you're just going on a fishing trip, and it ended up that, no, they're not just going on a fishing trip. They're leaving Oregon and going into Idaho, or you can buy booze at 18 instead of in Oregon at 21, and you're in the car with them. That's what I'm saying. You need to watch who you're running with. And Proverbs, he instructs simpleness. You know, you just fall into that. Well, I was just going to go have some fun, and you end up in a bar in Idaho. Not that that happened, because I put my foot down and was ready to go to fisticuffs about it. And so we went back to Eastern Oregon College. But I shouldn't have been there in the first place with these guys. Well, we caught some nice fish. But the experience wasn't worth it. Simpleness. Proverbs 24 and verse 30. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Lo, it was all grown over with thorns and nettles and covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep and a little slumber and a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come but one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. And so, maybe I'll have to do this myself here pretty quick. So you have a son that likes to sleep in, doesn't like to do his job. Well, let me tell you what you need to do. You need to bring him over to food bank and show him guys that are working for $11 an hour, $10 an hour, and the whole problem was they wouldn't get out of bed. They wouldn't work. They wouldn't discipline their life. And they're on the street. One of them came in the other day and was begging, could I give him some food? Could I do this? So he ended up grabbing, taking, like I said, okay, you can have some of that. So he put into his pockets 4 bags of Top Ramen and took off down the street. Living on the street. He's living on the street. Why? Because he couldn't say no to booze, and he couldn't discipline his life. He's undisciplined. And so I guess what I'm saying is they need help. Children need help. They're not going to naturally want to make their bed unless they just hate clutter. Some people do. They're not going to naturally, you know, do some things. And so he's saying here, you know, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. So shall thy poverty come. I realize that some people can be handicapped. Some people are retarded. But there's really no reason. There's really no reason in the United States of America for anybody to have to call the food bank and get a food box, go to work, except when there are those things or those exclusions. And I realize that there are some extenuating circumstances. But listen, poverty for many people is a result of their own decisions. There could be some exclusions. The Bible talks about poverty and taking care of the poor and sometimes widows and orphans, you know. Things have happened to them that they had no control over. But Proverbs is simply saying that our children come into this world with a sinful bent, that we need to turn up a child away, he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. That's to bend them the way that they're supposed to go. But they also come into this world with a computer that hasn't been programmed. They're simple. And when you got this simpleness that's affected by sinfulness, then you got a job to do. And we need to begin to talk to them and instruct them and help them to understand. And so the best thing that could happen is that when they're young and then they go and you teach them some things, and they're out one day in the neighborhood and they're playing baseball on the local field, and there's a warehouse over there that not being used all the time, and so one of the leaders, the charismatics, says, come on, let's get some rocks and let's go over there and break those windows out. That he's going to know, because of your instruction to him, it's time for me to go home. My time is up, and we're going to come back here, and I'm just going purposely slow through all this, because sometimes parents are the thick-headed ones and not their children. But I hope you understand this. You got a job to do. As a parent, you got a job to do. And you better not be AWOL. Because they'll come back and haunt you. And if you don't spend time when they're little, you're going to spend time as a Christian father when they're older, grieving and praying and grieving and praying. God has given you a very precious gift. He's given you your children. And you've got a job to do that only you can do. And here's what happens. Life is busy. Our bodies are weak. Time goes on. And hopefully you begin to see that as a father, that you better support your wife, buddy, because she's got the full load, probably 85% of it. And boy, you better be there strong for the 15%. And you better see this. That when you farm your kids off to the nursery school, when you farm them off to the babysitter, the daycare center, and I realize that there are situations where we need babysitters, single parents, But listen, not only are your children going to come out of those daycare centers with all the diseases that's going around town because the carriers are there, they're going to come out of there warped because the standards of their parents are, we both got to work because we got to have a good home, got to have a new car, got to have a four-wheeler, got to take our hunting trip, got to be able to go skiing in the summer on the lake and skiing in the winter on the mountain. And we got to have all these things. And we both have to work. And then when Junior comes home from the daycare center, they feel so guilty that what they do is they buy Junior a bunch of expensive gifts just so they'll know that we love them. And it's a warped love. A warped love. If you love them, you'll sacrifice and stay and keep your wife home with them. Okay, I'm chasing a lot of rabbits, giving a lot of my own opinions. But there's some Bible in there. And what's the Bible, you ferret out. But I'm just saying to you that when God gave you children, He gave them to you to raise. And the product. The product.